Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact this show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact this show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can also reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, the cash bail system. If you cannot afford to pay bail, go straight to jail. Bail was designed to allow people accused of a crime a chance to get out of jail in hopes that the money provided would guarantee their appearance in court. But not everyone can afford bail. and not all bails are reasonable. Does the criminal justice system punish those who cannot afford to pay bail? Punish those who are innocent and cannot afford to pay bail? Is there something more sinister at work? In Philadelphia, bail can be returned within 20 days of a full and final disposition of a case. The clerk of courts must return 70% of the cash bail posted to secure a defendant's release to the person who deposited the cash bail or is deemed to be the depositor. If a defendant posts 500 cash bail, 10% of $5,000 is 500, he will be entitled to a refund of $350 upon full and final disposition of the defendant's case. Philadelphia keeps 30% of the 10% even if the defendant is found innocent. So you're going to lose money even if you're innocent. From WHYY by IJ Beach, says Philadelphia has one of the highest prison populations in the nation. The typical bail request in Philadelphia is $20,000. It's estimated that up to 65% of those in prison in Philadelphia are awaiting trial and have not been convicted of any crime. Many of them simply cannot afford to pay their bail. And that convict said, I think there is a racial aspect to Philly as well. He told the interviewer, I can remember being in the district with people with the same charges who are black, and I would get ROR, release on reconnaissance, and they would go up and get the $3,000. You know what I mean? It's like, damn, it's kind of crazy. Apparently, this guy's not black. In Philadelphia, about 40% of arrests get ROR, while 60% get bail, and 66% of the entire inmate population is African American. Only 70% of bail posted is returned to the person who is who posted it in Philadelphia. That means that if you just talked about, if you get a $3,000 bail, even if the person is arrested, found innocent or not, it will end up costing them $900. So you're gonna pay any way you look at it. To quote, it makes no sense to spend public funds to house misdemeanor offenders in a high-security penal facility when the crimes themselves may not merit jail time. Apparently, people are being, given these bails for misdemeanor crimes, and some are innocent, but they can't post bail, so they go straight to jail. So, from Nick Wing, the Huffington Post, he said the average jail stay is 21 days, but pretrial incarceration can stretch on for months and sometimes much longer. Khalif Browder, a 22-year-old black man, was accused of stealing a backpack. Spent 3 years in a New York Rikers Island. That's serious jail time. Though he was never convicted of a crime, prosecutors ultimately dropped the charges, but years later, Browder died by suicide. He was unable to overcome his own pain and torment, which emanated from his experience in solitary confinement, his family said. So that's 3 years. What happened to a speedy trial? 3 years, no conviction. This is ridiculous. Of the nearly 750,000 inmates confined in jails around the U.S. at any time, between 60 and 70% haven't been convicted, according to federal data. Taxpayers spend an estimated $9 billion each year to keep these innocent people under lock and key, all at the expense of other publicly funded programs like education, transportation, and infrastructure. So we're spending a lot of money on locking people up and locking people up who are not guilty or for misdemeanor crimes that may not even merit a person's incarceration. 3 years, that's a felony. That's, you do over two, you convicted of a felony. This guy did 3 years and found not guilty. Something's wrong with that. And I'm sure he's not the first person that had that happen to him. Like many parts of the criminal justice system, these issues don't cut equally across racial lines. Judges tend to favor whites over racial minorities in pretrial proceedings. According to research cited by the Sentencing Project, people of color, the poor, and defendants with prior records are more likely to be considered public safety or flight risk, which influences decisions about whether to set bail and at what amount. When bail is set, blacks and Latinos are more likely than whites to face bond amounts that they cannot afford. A separate report by the Justice Policy Institute found that African Americans ages 18 to 29 receive significantly higher bail amounts than all other ethnic and racial groups. Commercial bail bond services have turned innocent people's pretrial release into an industry worth billions of dollars each year. A study of criminal data from Philadelphia between 2010 and 2015 found that defendants who were assigned money bail had a 6% higher probability of being convicted and a 4% higher probability of going on to commit another crime. According to 2013 data provided by Brooklyn Defense Services, and it's harder to mount an effective defense behind bars. Just 38% of defendants who remain in jail pretrial had their case resolved without a conviction, compared to 88% of defendants who made bail. So it's hard to work your case, to have a conversation, because you don't have freedom when you're incarcerated. So you're not moving around as freely as you would when you're not incarcerated. Don't take a genius to to see that. The bail trap from the New York Times. Every year, thousands of innocent people are sent to jail because they can't afford to post bail, putting them at risk of losing their jobs, custody of the children, even their lives. Now, you got a single parent, you got custody of the children, now you got placement. If you can't place that child with a family, then that child goes into a foster care situation. That costs money. Pinto, August 13, 15. Tyrone Tomlin, in his work clothes, was arrested in Brooklyn, New York, after submitting to, and I'm going to say that again, after submitting to being searched by a narcotics police officer who accused him of having drug paraphernalia, a straw that he had just received with a soda he had just purchased. Mr. Tomlin had allowed the officer to search him. The police officer submitted documentation stated his training and experience told him plastic straws are commonly used to package heroin residue. I'm going to say that one more time. The police officer submitted documentation stating his training and experience told him plastic straws are commonly used to package heroin residue. Tomlin's criminal history, which included 41 convictions, all of them save 2 decades old felonies for low-level non-violent misdemeanors, crimes of poverty like shoplifting food from the corner store. Tomlin's attorney told him that the judge would ask for bail because he got this long record, right? So the ADA tried to get Tomlin to plead guilty to a misdemeanor possession of a controlled substance and serve 30 days on Rikers Island. This is for having a straw. No evidence of a crime, no even reason for the police officer to even come over and search him. I mean, this guy's rights are being violated. You know, I don't understand. Tomlin declined to plead, stating the straw was a regular straw and lab tests would confirm that the straw was regular. But I don't understand this. How is the police officer to determine that the straw wasn't regular? He couldn't determine what the straw was. So how did he even have a right to arrest this guy? He could not determine if the straw was a regular straw or not, and why is he even doing that? You know, that's why is that happening? So, from provocative thought, this is some things from some points that I wanted to bring up about this whole situation with Mr. Tomlin. 41 convictions or not, you know, this man coming out of the store with a soda and a straw that he bought for soda, and he's been arrested for having drug paraphernalia. So the narcotics officer violated Mr. Tomlin's civil and legal rights by arresting him without evidence of a controlled substance. Everybody uses straws. Tomlin had just purchased a soda from the store. There was no evidence of a crime. The behavior of the narcotics officer is criminal, and he is a threat to the individuals, families, and community members. Harassing, racially profiling, and falsely arresting Mr. Tomlin for having a straw. The ADA having no evidence of a controlled substance and judging Mr. Tomlin according to his past criminal history, which is not the reason he was before the court. In fact, the only evidence of a crime taking place was Tomlin's past criminal record. Tomlin's criminal history, which indicated 41 convictions, all of them save the two decades-old felonies for low-level nonviolent misdemeanors. Tomlin had served two short stints in prison on felony convictions for auto theft and selling drugs in the late 80s and mid-90s. The ADA tried to coerce a conviction from an innocent man without evidence of a crime. That is a crime in and of itself. Mr. Tomlin's guilt appeared to have been assumed or, worse, used as a tool to yield a conviction by threat of incarceration regardless of guilt or innocence. The ADA's behavior is criminal, violating Mr. Tomlin's right to due process. The judge, having no evidence of a controlled substance, just a straw, ruled to set bail. The judge supported the coercing of the defendant's plea guilty, although there was no evidence that a crime has been committed, nor that he would not return to court. Not even the testimony of the narcotics officer supports that a crime has been committed. The behavior of the judge is criminal. So far, we have described the behavior of individuals in position of power in a kind of totalitarian state. The government with total power, dictatorial, oppressive, repressive power. People in positions of power do not have the right to destroy the lives of others, especially the innocent. They must be held accountable for their actions just as they hold others accountable for their action. Nothing is being done. Your tax dollars pay for your own subjugation and violation. Your vote supports your own subjugation and violation. The criminal justice system or representatives do not respect you, your rights, or the law. The Fourth Amendment, 1868. The clause also promises that before depriving a citizen of life, liberty, or property, government must follow fair procedures. I'm going to say that one more time because it didn't sound nothing about what I just described sound fair. Before depriving a citizen of life, liberty, or property, government must follow fair procedures. Thus, it is not always enough for the government just to act in accordance with whatever law there may happen to be. Citizens may also be entitled to have the government observe or offer fair procedures, whether or not those procedures have been provided for in the law on the basis of which it is acting. Action denying the process that is due would be unconstitutional. Wouldn't that be spending 3 years in jail? Having your case dropped, being incarcerated in Rikers Island for having a straw. There was no evidence of a crime, just the delusional word of the officer about what his training and experience taught him. Not much. Is that all a man's freedom is worth? Of the 2.2 million people currently locked up in this country, fewer than 1 in 10 is being held in federal prison. Far more are serving time in state prison, and nearly 750,000 aren't in prison but are in local city and county jails. Of those jails, 60% haven't been convicted of anything. That's a lot of folk just sitting and waiting. They're innocent in the eyes of the law, awaiting resolution in their cases. Well, I don't know. I thought prison time was for people that were convicted. Now, I understand in some cases, you know, you have a perp that actually committed the crime, just haven't been to court. And, you know, we can understand that, holding that person in court, you know, in prison or in jail, whatever, until trial. Some people are flight risk. That's true. But this is ridiculous. These are cases that we're talking about here. Also, the federal government doesn't track the number of people locked up because they can't make bail. What we do know is that at any given time, close to 450,000 people are in pretrial detention in the United States, a figure that includes both those denied bail and those unable to pay the bail that has been set. In New York City, the courts use bail far less than it many jurisdictions. Roughly 45,000 people are jailed each year simply because they can't pay their court-assigned bail. And while the city's court set bail much lower than the national average, only 1 in 10 defendants are able to pay it at arraignment. Even when bail is set comparatively low at $500 or less, as it is in 1/3 of non-felony cases, only 15% of the defendants are able to come up with the money to avoid jail. So, we had this situation here, like, why are we just throwing people in jail because they can't pay bail? Bail hasn't always been a mechanism for locking people up. When the concept first took shape in England during the Middle Ages, it was emancipatory rather than it was a way not to go to jail. So rather than detaining people indefinitely without trial, magistrates were required to let the defendants go free before seeing the judge, guarantee they return to court with a bond. If the defendant failed to return, he would forfeit the amount of the bond. The bond might be secured, that is, with some or all of the amount of the bond paid in advance and returned at the end of the trial. Or it might not. In 1689, the English Bill of Rights outlawed the widespread practice of keeping defendants in jail by setting deliberately unaffordable bail, declaring that excessive bail shall not be required nor excessive fines imposed. The same language was adopted word for word a century later in the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution. I mean, if so, what is going on? How's the guy even end up incarcerated at Rikers Island for a straw? How did he end up being arrested for having a straw? But bail has evolved in America. It has become less and less a tool for keeping people out of jail and more a trapdoor for those who cannot afford to pay it. Unsecured bond has become vanishingly rare. And in most jurisdictions, there are only two ways to make bail. Post the entire amount yourself up front, what's called money bail, or cash bail, or pay a commercial bail bondsman to do so. For relatively low bail amounts, say below $2,000, a range in which most New York City bails fall, the second option often doesn't even exist. Bondsmen can't make enough money from such small bills to make it worth their while. So if it's small, the bail bondsman is not coming to your aid because he has to put food on his table, pay for his house and his car, his truck, whatever he gets. So, you know, it's a business. Okay, so it goes on to Mr. Tomlin's went before the judge, right? It's in a hurried moment at the very onset of a criminal case before evidence has been weighed or even gathered that a defendant's freedom is decided. These decisions are taking place and basically no one has time to prepare. The stakes are high and not only for the obvious reason that jail is an unpleasant and often dangerous place to be. Rikers Island, that sounds like a place you go and die or kill somebody yourself. So the pretrial stretch in jail can unravel the lives of vulnerable defendants in significant ways. Tyrone Tomlin's drinking straw case was scheduled for a week after his arraignment. He left the courthouse, was loaded onto a bus, and crossed and was taken to Queens, to Rikers Island. Tomlin was assigned to one of the units on Rikers Island. Well, incarcerated people really have a nice thing to say about places where they've been locked up. Of course, who would? But an investigation by the United States Attorney Office this year found a deep-seated culture of violence among Rikers guards who reported using force against inmates more than 4,000 times a year. Violence among inmates was pervasive. The Department of Corrections document obtained by the Daily News reported 108 stabbings and slashings in 1 year. They say the place is miserable, but it's prison and it's dangerous. And Tomlin said it's dangerous and it's every man for himself. You could get abused, you could get raped, you could get extorted. That stuff is all around. So anyway, so Tomlin's unwillingness to hold out against the charges was unusual. Across the criminal justice system, bail acts as a tool for compulsion, forcing people who would not otherwise plead guilty to do so. Why are we trying to force people, regardless of innocence or guilt, to plead guilty to accept the punishment? Is this due process? Why are we sending people with minor infractions to prison? Rikers Island is not walking apart. 2012 report by the New York Criminal Justice Agency based on 10 years' worth of criminal statistics bears out in non-felony cases in which defendants were not detained before their trials, either because no bail was set or because they were able to pay it, only half were eventually convicted. When defendants were locked up until their cases were resolved, the conviction rate jumped to 92%, which brings to question, is the goal of the criminal justice system to convict those who stand before it? Because I don't know, the numbers is kind of indicating that. This isn't just, it says the multi-variable analysis found that even controlling for other factors, pretrial detention was the single greatest predictor of conviction. So pretrial detention, if they're saying that that increased the chances that you're going to be convicted and sent to jail. So I don't know, they said, just that alone, because I don't know, is that many people being arrested for things that they haven't done or that they're not guilty of or that they have no evidence of them being guilty of? I don't know. But the data suggests that detention itself creates enough pressure to increase guilty pleas. Yeah. Well, who wants to go to jail? So he had a little situation up there. He was on the phones All young boys want to get on the phone. He said he's on an important call, you know. This goes with that whole scenario where you don't have enough time to work out anything. And just, this man can't even be on the phone unless his life is in danger. Because what happened was young boys wanted him to get off the phone. He said, I'm on an important call. When he got to the shower, he was jumped by three young boys. This is the guy that's incarcerated for having a straw. So after his arrest, he returned to court. It was found that no controlled substance was identified. The report had been faxed to the district attorney's office the same day as Tomlin's last court hearing and days before his beating. The key to his freedom had been sitting unexamined, conceding that the case had unraveled. The prosecutor asked that the charges be dismissed. And the judge said to Tomlin, this is your lucky day. Well, how was he? What luck? This man got arrested for having a straw after submitting to a search. It was just crazy. Sent to Rikers Island. And this guy's saying he got his lucky day. He's being released because they arrested him for no reason. And he sent to Rikers Island for no reason. And he's lucky. Now he's having a lucky day. How's he going to have a lucky day? And who? Who holds the police officers that make these type of decisions, the ADAs, and these judges or hearing officers who co-sign these type of decisions? Who is holding these guys accountable for their decisions? I mean, it's a case where you don't send this guy to jail. He has a straw. That's all he has. Only thing the police officer identified was a straw. You got a guy that does 3 years in prison for a back sack or a book bag or something like that. Really? Who shall hold these people accountable for their crimes? And they are crimes, whether you got, whether it's on the books as a crime or not, put them on the books as a crime, because that is a crime. And we know that police officers, ADAs, and judges do not make, are not always honest. They're people first, police officers, ADAs, and judges second. So you can't help what you are. You a judge and police officer and ADA, that's a job. But the kind of person you are, you bring that to the job. So how could somebody allow a person to be arrested or set bail for a person for having a straw? Let somebody sit in jail for 3 years in solitary confinement? Whoa. For stealing a book bag? So a defense attorney in Houston, Kim Oak, said the accused would have to decide between pleading guilty, even if they weren't, and spending weeks or months in jail waiting for trial. That's a lot of pressure right there. Some of their clients insisted on pleading guilty at times because they wanted out. They were willing to say they were guilty and take the deal even if they were innocent. Is that the way we treat our citizens here? Is that fair? It's common. It's a common story in the courts around the country because the sky-high bail amounts, less affluent defendants are stuck in jail for low-level crimes while wealthy ones can buy their freedom by writing a check. This inequality has been the target of a vigorous reform movement in legislative action and lawsuits from New Jersey to Texas to California. Advocates are passing new laws or hoping to codify legal rights that establish that people charged with misdemeanors shouldn't be kept in jail only because they can't afford bail. They shouldn't even have bail. Come back to court. You got another court date. And what is this all about? Are we generating money through the prison system? Are we, you know? I don't know. It sounds a little sinister because it sounds a little racist. But there's a simpler and faster way to end cash bail. Prosecutors just stop asking for the bail. How about that? Stop asking for bail. Some guy stole a book bag. He doesn't belong in jail. Some guy was arrested, shouldn't have been arrested, incarcerated briefly, brought to court for having a straw, and you ask for bail for this guy? Are you kidding? He shouldn't even have to come back to court. And then officers should be reprimanded for violating this guy's rights. The ADA and the hearing officer or judge or whoever that was, they deserve some type of reprimand. Come on now. That kid spent 3 years in jail. Oak, who was elected DA of Harris County, Texas, recently directed her prosecutors to recommend defendants be released on their own with cognizance as the default in most misdemeanor cases. A thumbs up, Oak. The new policy exempts defendants who present a clear public safety risk, as I mentioned. So any request for bail must be based on evidence in the case. Harris County judges pushed back on the prosecutors, Oak said, grilling them about why they weren't recommending bail, and in some cases, ignoring their recommendations. What in the world? What is going on here? Why are you recommending bail? Misdemeanor cases. Give them a court date, they come back to court. What is the and why do they have to go to jail? Prison? I mean, like, man, this is a no-brainer. The same guys that's out that's killing people, catching them with a lot of dope and stuff like that. This is just a book bag, a straw. One guy didn't even commit a crime. I mean, just imagine people who haven't even committed a crime who are being incarcerated and can't pay bail or is just not going to take a plea because I'm innocent. I'm not playing to nothing. So you get punished for standing up for what's right. So are these ADAs only interested in getting convictions? Because that seems to be the mode, the thinking here. Are the judges only interested in filling the prisons? Because it seems to be the modality here. Let's fill these prisons up. Do you owe somebody some money in the prison system that you have to send people to jail? A lawsuit was filed by a 22-year-old Maryland Miranda Lynn O'Donnell, who was arrested in 2016 for driving with a suspended license and spent several days in a Harris County jail because she couldn't pay her $2,500 bond. O'Donnell's arguing that it is unconstitutional for officials to jail someone for an inability to make a monetary payment. During the hearing, in this case, O'Donnell's attorney played videos of judges callously setting bond amounts without even inquiring whether the defendants had the means to pay them. Some of the bonds strained like $5,000 for someone arrested for illegally sleeping under the highway or over. Come on, that's a homeless person. You're going to charge a homeless person $5,000 or they're in jail. Should this guy be on the bench? He's homeless. So it makes sense, Oak, who I quoted in the beginning, said it makes no sense to spend public funds to house misdemeanor offenders in a high security penal facility when the crimes themselves may not merit jail time. Sleeping under a bridge. Shouldn't you be trying to find that person a shelter? In San Francisco, there was another lawsuit against the bail system. It's working its way through the courts. District Attorney George Gascon has called bail inherently unfair and archaic. It's old, it's ancient, So it's not used right. It seems like it's using bail to me to keep you in jail. No consideration, if, like you said, if you can afford to pay bail. And you're asking for bail in cases where, you know, there's no indication the person will not return to court, or in the case of this guy who had a straw. Like, really, he shouldn't even have to come to court. He shouldn't have been arrested. He shouldn't have been searched. Why is this narcotics officer searching this guy? So we have legal arguments being tested in law, are being tested in lawsuits, like the one with Houston, is that cash bail violates the Constitution, equal protection, and due process under the law, as I mentioned earlier. So our bail system is leaving innocent people to die in jail because they're poor. Justice Policy Institute, 2016. This piece originally appeared in the Huffington Post by Nick Wing. Jail deaths disproportionately impact poor defendants, according to a month-long investigation published by the Huffington Post, which documented more than 800 fatalities in the past year across the nation's more than 3,000 city and local lockups. These facilities typically hold inmates who are awaiting trial or serving shorter sentences for misdemeanor offenses. Sandra Bland, who died in custody a year ago, found herself in a similarly distressing situation after being arrested in Texas, though she faced a more serious assault charge after being dragged out of her car and thrown on the ground by a police officer. Unable to pay her $5,000 bail or even a smaller percentage of that to cover a non-refundable bail bonds fee, the 28-year-old black woman sat in a holding cell for days before allegedly hanging herself. If she had been wealthier, her fate may have been different. Right there, you have more than just the bail issue. You have an issue of this is the girl that hung herself with the trash bags or something. Like, yo, come on, that's ridiculous right there. And I heard it had cameras and stuff like that, you know, that watched certain areas of the jailhouse. So I see we have a caller. If you want to speak, you have to press number one. So, Dave, sounds like you have a violation of her civil rights, human rights, and her right to life. There are nearly 500,000 inmates in jail who haven't been convicted. That's a lot of folk. According to the most recent federal data, many are facing lesser charges, which suggests that they are neither a threat to public safety nor likely to flee from justice. But because they don't have money, they face immediate punishment and exposure to a potentially fatal form of pretrial confinement, all without due process. You know, the whole country should be in an uproar about this, because this could happen to any one of us. You have people being arrested, incarcerated, can't make bail, and things are happening. You know, just the fact that you're being arrested and incarcerated, that's enough. Searched on the street for having a straw, that's an insult. That's an assault on you. You have a straw and somebody want to search you? Come on, probable cause. Critics say that money bail violates the constitutional guarantee of equal access to justice, regardless of an individual's wealth. Paul Sullivan, Associated Press, says, up until the end of the 19th century, U.S. courts relied on a system of personal surety, which allowed the accused to be released without upfront payment, so long as they could find a person or entity to take responsibility for their return to trial. Payment was only required if a defendant didn't appear. Well, this guy's getting on the first shot. As people became more transient around the turn of the century, communities became less tightly knit, making it harder to find willing people to stand up and say, you know, guarantee the person would return to court. Courts responded to this and other increase in flight risk by shifting to a system of secured bonds in which payment must be delivered ahead of a person's release. Bail became a question of a defendant's immediate financial resource. Are we kidding? Homeless man, what's his financial resource? $5,000 bail. What hearing officer or judge is sitting at that bench? Should be removed. You're going to put a $5,000 bail and you're going to place this guy, incarcerate him in a prison, put him somewhere where he could be at, or mental health, help him get to, if he had mental health issues, help him. You're not, it's the courts. You don't, this is crazy. So, the commercial bail bonding industry, now legal only in the U.S. and the Philippines, follows shortly after the seizing of the seizing the opportunity to make a tidy profit off those who could not otherwise afford their freedom. This sprawling industry handles about $14 billion in bonds each year. This sprawling industry handles about $14 billion in bonds each year, raking in $2 billion in annual revenue, according to a report by the Justice Policy Industry. And for some reason, the commercial bail bonding industry is only now legal in the U.S. and the Philippines. Even that, that's a red flag right there. So this business act as a surety for their clients, fronting money for their release in exchange for a non-refundable service fee, usually a 10% minimum on the total bail amount, which can be paid off at a later time. After their release, defendants are typically subject to the order of the bail bondsman, who are in turn responsible for making sure their clients return to court. If they don't, these companies dispatch bounty hunters who use a loosely defined set of powers to track down bail skippers. Today, millions of people churn through the U.S. jails each year, with the majority facing low-level charges. Defendants are disproportionately people of color, and the ones who remain incarcerated are often poor or suffering from mental health and or substance abuse issue. Bail was not intended to be used to punish these individuals. It is not supposed to be set higher than is necessary to preserve public safety, state safety, and assure that the accused returns to court. How many jurisdictions operate under ambiguous laws that allow them to assign bail without considering a defendant's risk profile or ability to pay? This can lead to bail being set indiscriminately, often at arbitrary moments. Oh, we have a caller. I'm sorry. Caller 9042. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Yes, it sounds like. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. How you doing?
Yeah, okay. Sounds just like a cash cow for the cities. The only way this can be fairly done, I feel that throughout the United States, the only one that should have to have a bond will be someone charged with a violent crime. I would think across the board, if it's not a violent crime, murder, you know, rape, those type of things,
right,
then it should not be any bail across the board. Because as long as there's a bail, poor and Afro-Americans across the United States going to be the one that feel the brunt of it.
Right.
It's like a drug thing that now they're saying it's emergency in the United States, but for 50 years, blacks been dying from drugs and been put in jail if caught with drugs, even though they weren't the main sellers of the drug. So the
right.
Only way this could be failed, that's why it's important that people register to vote and people that have been charged, those judges, you know, it's going to take time. This didn't happen overnight. It's going to take time, but it needs to be someone to take the baton and say throughout the United States, not in this administration, I don't think it will happen, but once you get the right type of president there, that it should not be any bail for nonviolent crime. And only time you go to have to go to court is when you go there for things like thieves. Long there's no violence. If there's any type of violence,
right,
then I'm sorry, you need to be on bail.
Right.
If there's no physical violence, if no gun was used in the crime thing, then there should be no bail. That's the only way you can sort of fix this thing over time. And until the people's mindset and vote people in that speak those things and let us know how we educate us, the public, on how we can get this changed. We need to know what we need to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we have a situation here that's not unfamiliar. I'm not even going to say this is rare, because we historically there's always been there's a history of minorities being abused in this country. But apparently, that's still going on. If you're poor, and the poor is the majority. But most people don't have money, you know, and not if you're living below the poverty level, the poverty level. Some people don't have money living above that because they're just living check to check. They're just a check away from being in the poorhouse themselves. So, you know, this bail thing, and the bone I'm picking today is, how are you even arresting, suggesting, and incarcerating a person for a straw? That's ridiculous. Those people should be dealt with, each, everyone, at every level. Until that, things like that happen, and they're not dealt with, or they're free to people, free to do things like that to people, that's going to continue, because that shows you how much power they have and how untouchable they are. If you know, they should not be above the law. You know, you represent the law, represent the law. You know what I'm saying? And if something's not right, come on. Why are you following somebody's lead? And his lead is just doesn't even make sense. This man has a straw. And, okay, because he has history of, so what? What's happening today? Forget about 41 convictions. This man has a straw. He doesn't have a gun on him. He has a straw. He don't have drugs on him. He has a straw. If that's the case, having a straw is that criminal, you need to go around all these stores, supermarkets, and close them down for selling drug paraphernalia, if you feel that way about it. You know, that's how simple that is to have to arrest that man for a straw. And he willingly allowed the officer to search him. Young man in jail 3 years for a book bag. He could have been murdered or raped in there, you know, or beaten. Well, hell, forget the murder, rape, or beating. Just 3 years incarceration. Best case scenario, that's not a good look. Same thing with the other brother. Oh, a month up or so up in Rikers. Come on. Without the beat down. That's that. Hey, he lost it. Look, you think they held his job for him? Who knows what else he might have lost. He might have lost his apartment, his house. I don't know. You know, just on some flimsy, not even evidence. You can just lock somebody up just like that. So taxpayers spend an estimated $9 billion each year to keep these innocent people under lock and key, all at the expense of other publicly funded programs like education, transportation, and infrastructure. So lots of money going to locking people up. That's the industry, the prison industries. Remember that, $9 billion a year. Those entangled up in the system, the consequences can be brutal. As I just said, defendants are living in, as I said, paycheck to paycheck. Come on, people can't afford these fines, and for something they may or may not have done, or for these misdemeanor offenses. What is going on here? You got to make everybody accountable. You want to make people, other people, accountable for the things that they do, then you have to be accountable for the things that you do. Criminal justice system, hold the police accountable. Hold the ADAs accountable. Hold these judges accountable for the things that they do. If you're not going to do that, then we're just living in a totalitarian state where people can do what they want to do with you. What are we going? What are we willing to do about this problem? As people, we can't sit and wait for somebody to do something about it. We need to start making a move to do something about it. We have 90 seconds left. I want to thank everyone for calling in, listening, and I want to wish everybody a safe holiday. Be careful out there, because I know we had like ice on the street here in Philly, kind of melted. But be careful while you're driving. And be careful, period, because apparently you can be incarcerated just because. Just because somebody says that you are involved in a crime. Don't even have to be evidence. All right? So I want to thank everybody again. Thank Retalk Productions, Mr. Jones, Kenny Jones, my mother, my father, the creator, listeners, my supporters.
You will not be able to stay home, brother.
Until next week.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.